where the wind comes sweeping down the plain. And the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Well, how's it going?
Good.
Good. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. So, have you listened to the Oklised podcast yet?
I have not.
So, we were trying to originally have the podcast with each person, but getting Scott and I scheduled together was trouble enough, and then adding, you know, the moderator's schedule in was tough, too. So we decided to start recording a phone call, just a quick phone call to talk about why the chat and what the expectations were before going into it. I know that this was a Anne and Kevin thing. How did we decide to get Colorado involved, or did they reach out to us? How did this come about?
Well, I mean, it was just, we were looking at doing different things, and Ann and I had talked about that for a while, and they just were, and it wasn't Colorado. That's the interesting thing about it, because I even thought it was Colorado for a while, but at the first of the chat, they're a collaborative chat from people in Michigan.
Whoa. So we were not, that was not a Colorado chat last night?
No, that is not Colorado chat. It's a collaborative education chat. And I don't know why they use COL chat as their hashtag. But, yes, they have that collaborative chat has a chat every Monday night from 8 to 9. They decided just to do their chat tonight, last night, with ours.
Okay, great. And I know that a lot of planning went into it. How do you think it went?
I thought it went really good. I think the toughest thing you had was putting both hashtags in made it a little bit difficult for some early on. But, you know, as we continued to tweet, please include, you know, both hashtags, I think as the chat went on, most people had included them. The interesting thing was when the document was put together, somebody cut and pasted in Oakland wrong, so all the original tweets went out.
Oh, no.
Without the Oakland hashtag, but we got that corrected really quick and moved forward with that. So that's, you know, that's part of doing the chats when things go wrong or things don't work out exactly, is learning to move on the fly and how simple it is and how fluid it is when you're dealing with people on Twitter.
I thought it went really well, and I had tweeted out, I thought, you know, gosh, for people who think the Oklised chat moves fast, having both of these groups together, it was just tweet after tweet after tweet last night. I don't think I could have followed it without having TweetDeck last night.
And it does help to have your curator, or, you know, TweetDeck or Hootsuite or whichever one you use, because it sure does make it a... It makes it smooth, and TweetDeck was good last night because you could put both hashtags, one on the right and one on the left, you know, in both columns, and make sure that if somebody wasn't using both hashtags, you caught it.
Yeah. Oh, and on that hashtag thing, too, I remember, you know, sometimes in just our Oklised tweets, I think, gosh, I got to find a way to fit everything I want to say, plus those 7 additional characters, that hashtag Oklised. Finding a way to do the COL chat last night as well. I mean, you really had to figure out your words to say what you wanted to say.
Yeah, it took when 10 or 15 of your characters are gone before you get started, you do have to shorten it some, especially for those that are long-winded.
Indeed. So did you have a favorite chat last night or a favorite question?
I think the building relationships without teacher, you know, I can't remember, I'm trying to think what question it was and how it was exactly worded, but basically about, you know, teachers and giving them autonomy and, you know, how would they teach, you know, because the assessment piece, I thought the whole thing was interesting because we forget we assess all the time and should be assessing all the time. It's just a total summative assessment may not have a piece, because when you give a kid a test and you don't get the results until they're in the next grade, then what value does that have to the kid? And so you got to be careful with those, in my opinion. And I think that's where we get hung up sometimes when people say we got to do away with the tests.
So in an ideal world, what's it look like for you, Mr. Heim? The assessment piece, the accountability to the state, the accountability to the federal government. What does that piece look like to you?
Well, I think ACT is a great move at the secondary level. I think at the elementary level, you still need some kind of piece. I don't think it needs to be so driven to promotion and things like that. I don't know that it should be connected to evaluations. But, you know, the issue we get in our business, like any other business, if there's 500 teachers in a room and you randomly select them, not all of those teachers are going to be great teachers. We'd like to think the majority of them are, because they have their heart in the right spot. So how do we, you know, if you take your best and brightest and your superstar teachers, you know, the assessments aren't, you know, having some kind of summative assessment at the end of the year is not needed, because they can tell you what their kids are going to do and how their kids are moving without it. So how do we PLC or collaborate in where the young teachers or the first year teachers can do that too without the summative test at the end of the year? The challenge we have, and we need to move forward on that side of it and not fight so much on doing away with all the accountability. You know, the education is more than about being able to pass a test. It's about the whole body or whatever. You want, like you said, you want the end result still to be good, and like anybody else, we know we can get better, but still, you know, most standardized tests are more reflecting upon poverty and other socioeconomic factors than they are upon what the school's doing. And so, you know, do we want to make an excuse and say, well, these kids come in with these indicators, we're not worried about them? No. And that's, you know, that's one thing I worry about forever. I want to make sure we challenge every student to be equally successful as the next students, regardless of their race or socioeconomic or cultural or any other indicators we may assign them.
All right, great.
All right. So welcome back to Oakless Said. This is our fifth episode. And I was really excited about last night's Twitter chat. We had the COL chat, which until this morning, I actually thought was the Colorado chat. Scott, did you know it wasn't a Colorado chat?
I didn't know it was not Colorado until last night, right at the beginning of our combo chat.
Yeah, well, I missed the thing. These guys were educators from Michigan, as Coach Heim has just told us, and it's a collaborative chat. I thought that was really interesting. It's the culture of learning chat.
Culture of learning takes place every other Monday at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time.
And we had a lot of people moderating this chat this week. Who did we have?
Gosh, we had a lot of guest moderators. We had Michelle Corbett, at Michelle Corbett. We had Kevin Heim, who's at Coach 57. We had Rodney Heatherton, at Rodney Heatherton. We had Adam Hartley, at AJ underscore Hartley 1. And we had the fabulous Ann Beck, at Mrs. Beck 25. So
yeah.
Tweets were coming from all over the place. There were 154 participants, and there were 743 unique tweets, not counting retweets.
No, that was fabulous. I saw that statistic this morning and I just thought, whoa. And I said it in the conversation with Mr. Heim as well, but my tweet deck, if I wasn't using tweet deck last night, I'd have been lost.
It was crazy. It was really busy. And I've been studying these tweets, you know, as you may or may not be aware, and 743 is on the high end of our typical amount.
Yeah, for sure. So the topic was March Madness, assessment madness. And, you know, it's that time of year.
You know, lots of basketball being played.
Lots of basketball being played. But you know what I hear a lot on the Twitters is there's a lot of test prep going on. And it, you know, I had to think long and hard last night after last night's chat, or after last week's Oakless Said podcast, am I really being the meanie that I thought? Because my students, I asked them and they were like, no, we love what we're doing. And so it dawned on me that I am test prepping, but they don't realize it. And so I feel like I'm doing good there. But test prep is on a lot of people's minds right now.
Hey, Aaron. Do you teach your students?
You know what, Scott? I do. I teach my students.
You're test prepping all year then. It's just called teaching.
I know. Okay. So, you know, it's just really hard when this big evaluative, summative test comes up. And I know that people from all over the state are going to be looking at scores. And it's a snapshot. And I hate that it's a single day snapshot. And so, You want to see, you know, when you're not the one evaluating and you're not the one who's seeing that they added instead of multiplied there, you know, you can see where those mistakes are when you're the one doing the assessing and the grading. But when you're not, and it's a multiple choice answer, it is very difficult to see where your teaching may have come into play and where their steps following through, you know, may have just been off the mark.
Yeah, hard to tell sometimes on those one-shot wonders. But that was the basis of our chat, though, last night was the assessment madness. And the first question just dove right in. We are heading into spring assessment March Madness season. What ways do you keep the focus on creativity?
So I saw a lot of tweets surfaced around voice and choice. And honestly, mine was too. But one of my favorite tweets of the night came from Megan Lloyd. And she said, "We sing Hamilton and Justin Timberlake." And she doesn't have a tested topic in the sense of spring assessments. Could you imagine every single kid going through her choir class has got to come out just feeling refreshed coming out of there.
Yeah, she does. And, you know, she may not have a tested subject, but her kids do go to events where they are, quote unquote, tested. So
no, yeah. That was just what, 2 weeks ago for her, 3 weeks ago, something
right,
like that.
Right. I really liked what Adam Hartley had to say at AJ Hartley, one of our moderators. He said, take advantage of the times you can control during March and April Madness and allow students to create / collaborate. And I think it's important to understand as teachers, we can fuss against the system. We can rail against the system. We can share that testing is good, but the data use is poor. We can rail against all kinds of things that are completely out of our control. The fact is, as teachers, we're asked to give these things. They are used. So let's control what we can control. And that's why I really liked this tweet, because he's putting power back onto us. Hey, let's control what we can control. And let's make sure that it's great for the kids when we do.
Yeah. So question two, education has continued to be standardized. How do you personalize learning for your students, Scott?
I really like what Drew Robinson at Fat Cat Artist said. She said, I think technology can help personalize learning and allow students to bring their passions into the mix. I have to agree with her a lot. I myself think educational technology is pretty fabulous. In fact, my tweet for this was use flipped class and gamification. So I think there's ways to do this without wrecking the system and while helping your students perform well.
I almost used your tweet for that, but I feel like I already pump you up and you already pumped me up a little too much here. So, but I did like, because it rings true to me, what Mrs. L. Spires said. And she said, love the idea to get students involved in the planning of lessons. And I do like to turn the, like, one of the first things we do here is I teach the kids how to read the standards. And so if they want to move outside of my curriculum or their standard curriculum and teach the lesson themselves, they can find one that they want to do. So they've learned how to read those standards, and they do take control of that sometimes. But I also liked what Beth Hill 2829 said. And she had a poster she put up, teach every child the way you would want your child to be taught. And that one really rings true to me, because I actually do have both of my own children as my students and have. So I do teach these kiddos the way I would want my children to be taught, because my children are in my classroom.
And I get frustrated when my kids come home and they bring home 1,000 worksheets. I'm not saying worksheets are bad all the time, but there's better.
Yeah, we've got to get beyond. I mean, yes, worksheets. I do have a worksheet that we're doing today with my seventh graders, but it is an owl pellet worksheet. So they are actually dissecting these owl pellets and then finding where they go on the worksheet. You know what I'm saying?
Like, it's disgusting.
It is awesome. It is awesome.
So next question then is, what do you do in your classroom to alleviate the testing madness?
So, like you just heard, we are doing a little dissection today. And, you know, they're still classifying. They're still organizing and putting things into place. But it will be through a fun project. We built a solar-powered little soda pop can rover 2 weeks ago. And I've got kids writing children's books right now. So we are still trying to, while we're learning the standards, bring that fun student voice and choice into it.
That's really cool. And we both actually independently chose the tweet for this one. It came from Bethany Hill, again, at Beth Hill 2829. And if you don't follow her, she shares some really creative stuff on the Twitters. So if you're new to the Twitters, she's a good one to follow. But she said, stay away from assemblies to pump kids up, quote unquote, for the test. These actually draw more attention and cause stress. I thought that was really interesting. And I understand what she's saying there. But I think sometimes, too, a sense of school pride can come into play a little bit and can make a little bit of a difference. So I'm not 100% on board with this, but I think when we do try and pump the kids up, I feel like we're sending glory to the tests, and I don't like that either. Again, it's the nature of the beast that we live in.
Sure.
My other one from this, I love this. June broke it at MPS Technology, a wizard in more schools with technology. His tweet just simply said Fight Club rules. And I thought that was hilarious.
That's awesome. Scott, if there were no state assessments, and this was the next question, if there were no state assessments, what would the alternative be?
Oh my gosh, can I tell you, I don't think I can count the number of times I saw project-based learning or student portfolio tweets that responded to this. I think every teacher in the world recognizes that our current assessment situation is not ideal for how it's being used. But I loved what Miss Jackson at Jackson 5th and 6th said. She said, I'm a huge fan of the portfolio. You can look at my students' work and see so much growth. I thought that was brilliant.
No, that's great. Miss Tanya, she said project-based learning and innovation, too. I just think that if we collect their materials, and I've got a Google Drive folder for each of my students, and I know several people do. Seesaw is a great method for collecting that information. You can see I've got a folder for these kids that they've been adding to for several years now. And so you can see their growth and how far their projects have come and, where they used to be with a standard and where they are, because now that the standards span so many grade levels, and they did before, but you can just see it better now. You can see where they took a standard and made a project 3 years ago in fourth grade, and now in seventh and eighth grade, even the same stuff with more detail. You can see it still. It exists, and I can open this up and send it in to be evaluated. But how do you easily evaluate those projects? And I mean, what kind of a rubric do you use when you've got collaboration and creativity going on?
I think that's one of the reasons why there isn't a push to do that. If you give a standardized test, the kids do their multiple choice mark and it runs through a computer program, and then they determine what cut score best shows how much that student has learned. And I think, some obvious drawbacks to that is we don't see any growth from the students. So we're taking that one snapshot that one day. So if I have a student that's just a super duper low performer, and that's where they come to me in August, but by April, they're a super duper high performing low performer, then that's significant progress, which doesn't show up. If we had a portfolio, that would exist. You would see evidence of that. But realistically, trying to go through and grade portfolios for 500,000 kids would be quite the chore. And I don't know that you could just hire that person through a Craigslist ad.
Probably not. Are they on LinkedIn? Is there a LinkedIn specialty category?
Yeah. Come grade for Pearson. We advertise on Craigslist. Okay, moving on. When and how often should we use project or performance-based assessments when state tests are mostly forced choice assessments? Erin?
So at Kim Loggett had said, it comes down to it. We have to do this test. And I posted and deleted a rather colorful tweet. I changed my mind after it went out. You know what? But I'm kind of to this point of, gosh, screw the test. I know that sounds horrible, and I have just decided, I've basically just said I'm not getting hired anywhere beyond the school that I'm at, right? screw the test. We got to continue to do the projects. That's real life. And I found the same tweet you did for this one as well, at Mr. Rogers Tech. Adam Rogers said, how often does the business world use projects versus tests? You know, it's just not real life to go sit down weekly or even twice a year and take a multiple choice test at my job. I actually, you know what? Those GCN trainings, bloodborne pathogens, anybody?
Hey, oh
you know
my
what?
Gosh.
I do take multiple choice tests every year.
I will not tell you what I used to do during those things, but here's how you can, you ready for our, okay, teachers, tune in. This is your yearly bloodborne pathogens professional development. You ready? Here it is. If it's wet and it's not yours, don't touch it. Okay, we're good.
Thank you. the next question was, can parents and students opt out of state testing assessments? What happens if they do?
So I'm not sure exactly what the rules are here in Oklahoma. I know that in the Tulsa area, at Edge Blogger was a middle school principal, and I don't know what happened, but a lot of his parents opted out of state testing 1 year, and he got called on the carpet and fussed at by the lady who was in charge, and he didn't do anything wrong. Just the parents said, screw it, we don't want to do this with our kids. So I know it exists out there. I'm not a fan of the RSA test, and I've had conversations with my own daughter's principal about the RSA test and how I really don't want her to take that. And the principal's like, no, she needs to take it. We get penalized if she doesn't. So,
right.
I don't know. I think it's a sticky wicket. Angela Clark Little, who is a big advocate for public education here in Oklahoma, she said, in Edmond, we can't opt out, but parents can refuse the test. It's not easy. Wish our board would adopt an opt-out policy. I think the issue with that, though, comes back to how these things are used, and that is, if a student, that you have to test X percent of students, and if you don't, there's a penalty placed on the school, and we put so much darn emphasis on this A to F stuff that it's a negative result.
Right. I can't wait to see, you know, what comes out of that. I hear mumblings from, you know, the COSA people that say that this is probably the last year for A to F. Mm. I don't know, you know, I don't know how it gets changed or how, you know, what it looks like beyond that. But yeah, I think funding as well as evaluations are tied to state tests, and that 90 something percent must be met. You know, it's just, it's an awful beast, and opting out of it, you know, it hurts the school. So we want to not hurt our schools, but you can see the mess that gets thrown in when, especially we're a choice state, you know, how much choice do you give the parents, and can you decide to public school and then also have the choice not to test? You know, I think that some things like that need to be looked at for sure. You know, what happens if they do? I don't know. Do you know what the end result was with Rob?
I don't remember. I know that they didn't count his data that year or something like that. I don't know.
And didn't he just do it with the field tests?
Yeah, well, I think.
I mean, not he, but his parents.
The school, yeah, the parents were like, you cannot use. I think the whole thing was they didn't want their kids being the guinea pigs.
Right.
I think that's what it boiled down to. And at Blue Cereal has written a blog one time. What if every teacher said, I'm not doing it? And if every teacher refused to give the test or monitor it or proctor it or whatever, now what? Now what are you going to do? And I don't know. Those are deep thoughts for Jack Handy, that's for sure.
For sure.
So next question was, should there be common assessments or common understandings? Why not? What do you think, Aaron?
You know, I feel like all tests that are summative, whether they happen in April on a specific day or at the end of a unit, at the end of a chapter, you know, in class, however it comes up, aren't they all semi-common? I mean, if I am teaching a single subject, there will be a common assessment at the end of it. And whether it's a conversation that happens and I can tell everybody is engaged in the conversation, or if it's a multiple choice test,
you know, there are assessments that come along with everything we teach. We need to make sure that they got it. How else do we make sure that they got it without assessments?
I think you hit on a point there. Sometimes we throw assessments into this ginormous dirty word category, and I think it's the way the assessments are being used. You and I both came through school at a time when I took a handful of tests, like a math test and some other standardized one, and an ACT. I mean, it wasn't like we rolled through a month long of testing. It was like 1 week out of the year or whatever. And we turned
and
out fine.
I remember drinking a bunch of apple juice and having crackers, and it was kind of fun.
Yeah, see?
Like, testing week was fun whenever I was a kid.
Yeah, those days are gone. I really liked what Shelby at Shelby Junior 3 said. She said, we need to understand or know common things, but we can't expect the kids to learn them all in a common way. Bingo.
So true. Yeah. Can we just drop our mics now and head on out of here?
I don't know. My mic was kind of expensive, so I don't know.
Yeah. Mine's on a stand. It'd be hard to drop. All right. What will you do tomorrow to ensure that March Madness doesn't take over your classroom?
I don't necessarily have a classroom. I never made a big deal about it, and other than to encourage kids on test day to do their best and show off their brilliance. And I don't make a big deal out of it at my home with my kids. But Kevin Heim, who's the superintendent out in Clinton, his tweet was great. He said he wants to make sure the admin, teacher, students, and support staff all know that the hashtag CPS Reds is about more than a test score. True statement right there.
You know, and his school, you know, I think Clinton is doing so many things right. Clinton Public Schools is doing so many things right. I know where a lot of schools are starting this test prep. It's, you know, this lead up to. He's got, is it James Dashner, the Maze Runner author?
Yeah.
So he has got that author out at their school today. They've got their fifth graders, sixth graders, their junior high kids, all going and listening to this author speak and tell his story and get these kids pumped up about writing. And they're not writing. They're, you know what I'm saying? Today is a day of inspiration and real life writing versus, all right, guys, let's write and make sure everybody's on track. So when we get to that writing component of the assessment, then blah, 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 blah.
We're going to read the Scarlet Letter word for word, and we're going to talk about it.
And then we're going to write about it.
What was your favorite question, Aaron?
My favorite question was that if there were no state assessments, what would the alternative be? And I think that that is the question that needs to be carried forward. I'm a carry it forward, you know, think about it, and let's figure out the plan here type girl. And this one's the one it needs to, the conversation needs to continue around that question. What about you?
I agree. I really liked, should there be common assessments or common understandings of why? And I feel like there should be, but again, it's how we use those things that are important. And I know a lot of times teachers feel trapped in a specific lesson plan, a specific way, at a specific time, on a specific date, for a specific class period. And I want to argue against that line of thinking. If you and I are teaching the same thing, our kids need to come out with some common understandings, even if we're in different classrooms, right?
Yeah.
But also to help check myself, if we're giving a common assessment, we can also talk back and forth about that, because maybe your kids scored brilliantly on something and mine struggled. Then I need to borrow your brilliance and find out how you taught that thing. I don't think having common assessments or common understandings means I have to teach like Aaron Barnes. It just means that we have a common goal that we're working together. And, you know, when I was teaching pre-calculus at Edmond, one of my good friends and I, we flipped our classroom together. We gave common assessments and we did common understandings, but she taught different than I did. But at the same time, our kids, both of our separate groups of kids, recognized that both of us were there for all of them. And so that's it. That's what you want as a teacher, right?
Those relationships have to be made.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe if you make the relationships, the testing buy-in, the willing to go through the rigmarole, maybe it comes along with it.
Yeah, maybe so. I just think that we need to consider how we're using this stuff and not be so offended by it. We can still have tremendous autonomy and have common assessments and common understandings we're working towards.
Boom. On the topic of boom, what was your boom sauce tweet of the night? I see that we both chose the same person, but different tweets.
Rob Miller is blunt. He's witty. He's sarcastic. And when he strikes a chord, he strikes it hard. I loved his tweet. I suppose we could try what worked for most of America's history. Trust teachers and let them do their job.
Boom.
I mean, that is a mic dropper, let's get out of here situation.
In response to question one, how do you keep the creativity going with the assessments, you know, building? His tweet was, teach kids to creatively bubble the answers. Let some do it left to right, top to bottom, circular motion, pencil dots.
Oh, okay. So if every teacher encouraged their kids in Oklahoma to do something like that, you know, you'd only do it a couple, 2 or 3 years in a row. And then what?
I read a book by John Taylor Gatto, and he said, if every student would just come together and write, I prefer not to, on the test, you know, it would definitely raise the eyebrows. So I love his answer there.
And I think, again, to kind of sum up all this stuff, I think that for the most part, teachers are just frustrated with how assessments are being used with a hammer to beat them over the head instead of a metric of this is where my kids are and what I need to do to help them get better.
Especially when we don't get the results to be able to be effective with them.
Right. Which boggles my mind. We can get instant raw data back the second they hit send on the computer. We get instant raw data to know in math, it's usually a 55 question test. We don't know which field items aren't being included, but we know right away the kid got 50 out of 55. The kid got 33 out of 55. The kid got 23 out of 55, whatever. We know right away. Why does it take then, you know, a week after the testing window closes, why does it take from May until October to get those results back? It's crazy.
You know what? What if we kept common assessments? What if we kept the state assessments, but gave them in September and then we got them back by January and we could actually let that drive instruction?
I think that's the thing that needs to happen is it just cannot. The only one that benefits anybody is RSA because it has to happen so fast. And you
but
know what?
With our RSA, teachers can teach section 2 and section 4, which is what the biggest components are. No need to teach section 1 or 3, guys. Sections 2 and 4 or whatever are going to be the most, you know, tested on. So why even teach standards 1 and 3?
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely not a perfect system. And I think there's a way, too, that you can actually pass the reading part and fail a different part of RSA and still fail the whole thing, but it's supposed to gauge your reading. I'm not an expert on that one because I don't teach those age groups. But nonetheless, there you have it. This week's Twitter chat with Cult Chat over testing madness.
So what's going on next week, Scott?
Well, next week we're going to have an Indian Education Leadership and Policy Twitter chat, which is important here in Oklahoma as we have a lot of Native Americans that are a part of our culture, and it will be moderated by @FunstonWM.
Did you know that Oklahoma means red people?
I think I had learned that at some point, as most of my schooling has occurred here in Oklahoma. I'm sure it came up somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All
right, educators, you know what to do. Go out and dominate the world.
You're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.